Hello and welcome to Sipfa Speaks, the podcast where we explore the latest issues in public financial management affecting people, place and planet. I'm your host, Jess, and today we're exploring why stronger monitoring and evaluation frameworks are essential to support successful government initiatives. With a renewed focus on addressing regional inequalities, the Labour government has committed to mission-led growth strategies aimed at delivering tangible improvements across communities. But without solid mechanisms to track progress, measure outcomes, and ensure accountability, these initiatives risk falling short. So how can we make sure that funding and policy align to create real measurable impact? Joining me today to explore these themes are Geoffrey Matsu, Sipfa's chief economist and co-author of Sipfa's Mission-Led Growth, a monitoring framework for large-scale government initiatives report, and Mara Airoldi, report co-author and director of Government Outcomes Go Lab, bringing their insights into how monitoring and evaluation can shift from mere compliance to a tool for real learning and growth. We'll discuss what it takes to move from a fragmented approach to a unified data-driven strategy and how the four essential reforms to assess public spending identified in the report can bring greater transparency, accountability and trust to government initiatives. So Geoff, I'll start with you. Thank you for joining us today. Previous governments have struggled with funding large-scale initiatives. What do the four reforms in this report aim to address?
Thanks, Jess, and hi, Mara, and hi, audience. So there are lots of challenges in the UK, largely stemming from a very fragmented funding and policy landscape. This isn't anything new. It's been something that has been ongoing for multiple governments. And the fragmentation has resulted in a funding environment where local authorities across the UK, but particularly in England, are set to compete against each other for very small pots of money that are designated for anywhere from 12 to 24 months in duration. And so they're constantly chasing small, relatively well-defined pots of money where they have very limited ability to use their local knowledge and priorities to deliver better public services. So number one would be for the new government to really focus on making sure that the funding architecture is fit for purpose. The second point I would raise is around targeting investment in deprived areas. This was one of the goals for the two initial tranches of leveling up funding. But it was challenged by the fact that there was very limited transparency around how the criteria that the government had defined was actually being applied to councils that had applied for funding. So the criteria, the metrics were sort of articulated, but the weightings in which these various criteria were issued weren't clear. And so that needs to be improved going forward. And there's also sometimes definition creep where in the third round of leveling up funding, for example, the government shifted its priorities towards productivity and innovation as being main drivers rather than deprivation. And so this had led to some confusion amongst local government local authorities. And so moving the target during times of funding and rolling out large-scale initiatives like this isn't helpful. So we really need to be focused on transparency, accountability, and clear definitions.
Thanks, Geoff. And Mara, thank you also for joining us today. I know that you've talked before about monitoring and evaluation mindsets like compliance versus learning. Could you explain how each of these affects monitoring and evaluation outcomes and sort of the aims that Geoff just touched upon?
Thank you so much, Jess, for having me on this podcast. You're exactly right. I think monitoring and evaluation is a term that often evokes compliance, policing, punishment, and is a performance management and being controlled externally. to achieve certain objective. And if we fail to achieve this objective, there might be consequences, often punitive. There are reasons for that, especially when we are talking about spending public resources. We want to make sure resources are spent well, that we deliver quality services for our citizens. Yet, monitoring evaluation is also a great opportunity for learning. And we are not doing enough of this. And we are not doing enough of this because it's a mindset shift, really. The idea is that is also a mechanism for internal control for the organization to be reflective and set expectation of what their action is intended to achieve in a measurable way and verify they're moving towards those goals as anticipated, and if not, course correct. This is a fundamental role of monitoring and evaluation that often we don't pay attention to. So when we are supporting communities, growth in the communities, often we don't know for sure what is going to work. The context shifts continuously, and organizations that are place-based often have that local know-how, the contact, the understanding of what will work in a particular community. Yet, it might be difficult to be prescriptive at the beginning of a program with everything that will happen. If monitoring and evaluation is used as a performance mechanism instrument in a much more dynamic, reflective way as a learning exercise, I think government, central government and local government can be more successful in delivering what we aim, because we are not measuring to hold to account in order to punish if we don't perform, but to hold to account for improvements. So if the outcome is not being materialized, we can sit down and have a honest conversation about why is it not happening, what should change, what should we do differently to make it happen. And it's really in a mindset. And I'm not saying that the traditional accountability, hardcore monetary evaluation is not necessary. It's important because, as I said, we are spending taxpayers' money, and yet we should also do it in a constructive way. Delivery organization, local government are trying to do the best for our citizens in most cases, and giving them the support they need through learning together is what will help us meet the needs more effectively and faster.
That's a really interesting point. And as you said, a mindset shift of monitoring and evaluation to be used as a tool to sort of foster that culture of learning. And Jeff, the report emphasizes the need for standardized data collection. Why is this so critical for mission-led initiatives?
For large, complex government programs such as Leveling Up, but this applies to other domains such as net zero, international competitiveness. It's not just the economy. There's social indicators, there's cultural factors. And so when you're comparing outcomes that are being achieved over these various cross-cutting themes and domains and trying to deliver these goals across different geographies and spatial scales, it can be very complicated and very confusing. And I think that's what we ultimately saw with Leveling Up. There was just so much going on, so much ambition, and there was clarity brought about by the Leveling Up white paper, which had been published in the spring of 2022. But as I said, it had 10 missions, 49 metrics in total, lots of different potential interpretations of each of these metrics. And we kind of unpack this through the report in quite granular detail, mapping each of the metrics to the outcomes that were achieved between 2019 and the latest available data. But ultimately, to assess each of the 10 missions, there needed to be data sufficiency. So we're talking about standardization, but before you can even standardize, we need to ask ourselves, is there sufficient data? And when it comes to subnational data, the answer is no. Things on the tin, on the packaging, may seem to indicate the same thing is being measured, but in practice, when you actually look under the bonnet, you realize that, okay, these things seem similar, but they're actually measuring different things. And so the first step to standardization would be asking, well, how could some of these things be brought to align with each other so that they can be compared, not just over time, but over places as well. And then secondly, I think when you try to bring these disparate sources of data together, it's important to create sort of a tracking system. So in a data infrastructure, so to speak, where it helps not just to visualize what's happening, but for all the data to sort of speak a common language so that policymakers, practitioners, people in the third sector, all these stakeholders who have a vested interest in achieving the stated outcomes are able to sort of monitor and evaluate. And so that is sort of the importance of standardized data, to make sure that everyone is speaking a common language and that at the end of the day, we can come back to the stated intentions and then define whether or not those targets were met or not.
Absolutely. And I know that, Mara, the burden of data collection and reporting tends to fall on frontline organizations. How can we balance meaningful data with reducing this load at all?
That's a very good question, Jess. In the work we do, we see a lot of frustration and stress when more monitoring and evaluation is brought in who gathers the data. And as Jeff was saying, we need the data infrastructure, we need some standard and speak the same language. And I think it's important to not make the perfect the enemy of the good. You don't always need to collect every single piece of information. It's about thinking, what is the type of information that you have access to that is easier for you to collect, and what among that information that lends itself to generate insight and learning on the direction you are taking, so that the gathering of data has a value also for the organization that gathers data. And something that we often overlook is the value of the interpretation of this data. When we collect data on outcome-based contract, that is a data-rich environment, even there where there is some standardization, we see this is really, really important to allow space for the organization to explain what's happening. The hard data often is a quantitative piece of information, needs to be explained. There might be changes in performance and you need to put it into context. And so there is qualitative data that needs to be gathered as well. And one thing that we see is can be used more is benchmarking. Often when we gather data, it's very difficult to make sense of the piece of data if we are only looking at our own organization or our own context. But looking at what other similar organization or other local authority are doing in a similar policy aim is really, really informative to help us understand, oh, we could do better there, and so let's put more effort in that particular dimension because it seems that others are more effective. Can we reach out to them? And so there is this, again, learning. And I think much of the work that CIFA is doing is along the lines of giving opportunities to benchmark and learn from each other. And the report that we wrote with CIFA on the mission-driven government is about how do we use this dashboard as a mechanism to learn and benchmark in a way that is there is a balance between effort and efficacy. So how can we recycle much of the data that is already there? How can we encourage organizations to gather data that is helpful for them to learn and use that also for our monitoring and evaluation?
I really like Mara's point about not being distracted or consumed by perfect data or the desire to perfect, you know, the approach to monitoring and evaluation. Because if you try to do that, it will just never lift off and ever get completed. So I think that's a really, really important point to underscore.
And I know following the report, there's a dashboard in the SIPFA Nearest Neighbours model. Jeff, how do you feel this can help with transparency and funding to build trust?
I think there's several things that government could do. First, it could clarify funding data by making the amounts awarded each year explicit. As good practice, I think it's important that pre-announced or pre-allocated funding shouldn't be included in new announcements, because then it really confuses to pretty much everyone other than Treasury what is additional. And I think that additionality is quite important when we talk about supporting policies. I think timeliness is important. So aside from just the detail in how funding data is published, I think it needs to be timely. And I think that's where government often misses the boat. It's so consumed oftentimes of trying to perfect, as Mara was saying, how data is presented, that instead of just, you know, doing 80% good and then letting the 20% follow later, it wants to sort of perfect. And I think that really reduces the ability of other players, whether in academia or in policy or practice such as SIPFA, to sort of feed into the process. And thirdly, it's around definition creep. And I think I mentioned this at the beginning, which is when you have public policies that target overarching themes such as spatial inequalities, it's very easy to kind of say, okay, well, this is, you know, what we're kind of looking at now, because these themes are very complex and they span over several years. So it's very easy for different governments or as ministers change for those priorities to shift. And the way to circumvent that or prevent it would be to develop a template that could be embedded across all major government initiatives from the start all the way through, so that you can map back in a continuous and transparent way, so that it limits sort of this definition creep that can actually be quite corrosive to how outcomes are actually achieved, if at all.
Thanks, Jeff. And I think our audiences will be really curious to know, how can we focus on the value and value for money? So Mara, I'll start with you. I'd be curious to know, how can we measure public value in ways that go beyond cost control?
Thank you, Jess. I agree that when we talk about value for money and accountability, we're focusing more of our attention on the cost, because it is easier to measure. It's not easy to measure, but easier than value, and in particular public value. But at the end of the day, what we care about is meeting needs and generating value for our communities. It is difficult. And I think as a researcher, it's really important that we do more to support policymakers in defining values in a way that is measurable. And the work that we are doing at the Go Lab by looking at outcome-based contract offers a very interesting lab of ways in which we've been measuring value in terms of the impact and outcome that have been generated. Not all the measures are perfect. They don't all indicate additionality, and some of them might not be timely, but they really try to give a voice to those whose life we are trying to improve, for lack of a better term, but whose needs we are trying to meet as a community. And those metrics need to be shared. We public them for all the projects that we've been supporting, for instance, in the 30 project of the Life Chances Fund. That is a big initiative that is coming to end in next year. These projects have articulated what good looks like in terms of the value generated. They indicated a metric, and quarterly they reported how well they've been doing and what they learn on the process. I think this is a way in which we can really protect value for money by looking at the value as well as the money. And there are ways, and we look forward to sharing more on which are the outcome metrics that seem to have been driving most improvements.
Absolutely. And Jeff, what are your thoughts on focusing on the value in value for money?
I think the government's approach to VFM is to be commended. I think Green Book is world leading in terms of building sound business cases that justify big spend. But I think, as I said, coming back to data, We do have the ONS and the Subnational Data Explorer that they continue to build up. It's still very thin in terms of standardized subnational data, but it's a work in progress, and I think that's to be commended and supported. We also have the Office for Local Government, which I think needs the sector support to better define what its function and purpose and where it can add value to the sector and large complex policy initiatives such as leveling up or whatever the replacement from labor will be. And lastly, the newly announced Office for Value for Money. We need to ask and be quite critical of what this type of quango will do and, you know, why it's separated from Treasury. Shouldn't it be within Treasury? But if you're going to have it separate, being clear as to what value that affords.
And when thinking about actually implementing the framework from SIPFA's report, could you talk to me a little bit about the nearest neighbours model? How can this help?
Yeah, the nearest neighbours model is really unique in that it pulls together 40 socioeconomic indicators to produce a nuanced representation of similarities between local authorities that is not geography based. And it's really, really important that when we compare local authorities, that we're not just saying, okay, well, you happen to be near each other or you happen to be the same size. And so we're going to compare the funding needs and the outcomes that come from that funding. So having this benchmarking tool like Nearest Neighbors is really, really powerful. And we use this model, this benchmarking tool within our report to distill the statistical distance between authorities when we're comparing different metrics that support the 10 missions that underscored the leveling up agenda. And so this approach is helpful. It's also similar to what's used by the UK National Audit Office. So it aligns with existing methodologies and it allows our audience to really play with the data, to go into the dashboards. If you visit the SIPFA website, you can kind of look at this data dashboard and pick two places and it will show you, okay, compared to its nearest neighbor, compared to the average of local authorities, this is how performance has changed over time. And I think that type of visualization tool is really, really important for practitioners to understand how they can improve.
So, Mara, if audiences could take away one thing from this discussion, what would you like that to be?
Well, I would like them to think about the importance of changing the attitudes toward monitoring and evaluation and paying attention to the value that is being created and how you can monitor that and how you can use that to learn and improve.
Thank you. And Jeff, do you have any final thoughts on what you would like our listeners today to take away from this discussion?
For me, I think this report that we've co-published with the Blavatnik School Government Outcomes Lab is a testament to the importance of partnership and collaborative working. If we're really to bridge evidence to more effective policymaking, it's important that we work with academia to bring forward not just data frameworks and structures, but then to map that with the capacities that exist on the ground with practitioners. And I think this type of report showcases the goodness that comes from working together. And so I'm quite proud with what we've achieved with GoLab on this piece of research. And I would encourage our audience to pursue similar types of collaborations.
Thank you. And Jeffrey Matsu and Mara Airoldi, thank you both for joining me today on SIPFA Speaks. For those listening, make sure to follow us on social media for more and to never miss another episode. Previous episodes can be found on SIPFA's website or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. We'll be back next month. Until then, goodbye.